As many of you know, I have started wearing a clerical collar when I'm going to be out and about in the world doing my work during my working hours. I don't wear it on Sundays because y'all know who I am. It seems kind of redundant. But I started this because it seemed to me that it was time that the liberal, progressive, religious folk show up in a way that is obvious. I was hoping that by doing this, I would end up having conversations with folks about faith and ethics and how we live out our ethics. And it's kind of working, and it's kind of uncomfortable. When I started in the ministry in the mid-80s, nearly everyone knew what a clerical collar meant. And I think maybe not so much now. But if someone does understand the collar, I get two kinds of reactions. One is a kind of nervousness, like I hold all the afterlife power. And if that waitress doesn't serve me just right. The other type of reaction is more interesting to me. Many times folks they're almost compelled to talk to me in an almost confessional tone. And the conversation goes something like this. So, you're a minister, huh? Why, yes, I am. Really? Because I used to go to church when I was a kid, but I don't know, I just couldn't believe about some old guy in the sky running the whole universe. And why send people to hell? Isn't this world hard enough? Who could believe in that? And I say, well, that's not the God I believe in either. And I don't believe in hell. If anything, I believe in loving the hell out of this world. But, says my newfound acquaintance with a look of incredulousness, you are a minister. Let me tell you what I do believe. And so the conversation begins. I've had this kind of conversation for years. When I started in ministry, being a female in ministry was odd enough that it started conversations. Much of the time, I leave these conversations grateful for the opportunity to talk theology because I really like talking theology. As much as I talk about business and administration and money and religious ed and music, what I really like talking about is theology. But these conversations have also left me a bit perplexed. Why did people get stuck and resistant on this idea of the sacred? I have a colleague who refers to this as the Sky Daddy theology. Why couldn't they just let that theology go and move on to some other understanding of the sacred? And I have come to believe that perhaps that is the wrong question. Recently, I read a book called A God That Could Be Real. If this sermon interests you, I encourage you to read the book if you haven't already. In it, the author Nancy Abrams points out that the predominant theology here in the West is at best based on a science that comes out of the 1500s. Early in Western scientific belief, there was the idea that the world is flat, that there was the world below, our world, and the world above. And the sacred existed in the world above and took care of our world. And then Copernicus came along in the 1500s and showed that our world is round and not the center of the universe, and all the planets orbit around the sun. The sacred, however, still remained as this being who lived in a celestial world out there. And as science progressed in its understanding of our universe, the concept of the sacred did not keep pace. And now we find ourselves in a world where scientists are exploring the Big Bang, black holes, quantum theory, string theory, and the dominant concept of the sacred is still mired in the big guy in the sky theology. It's no wonder that people start conversations with me about how impossible the idea of God or the sacred is. And I could not agree with them more. Perhaps you have heard this funny story. A first grader was in class working furiously on a drawing. Her teacher came over and asked, "What are you drawing, honey?" And the child said, "God." To which the teacher replied, "But no one knows what God looks like." And the child looked at the teacher and said, "They will in a minute." It makes us laugh because it points out a truth that we think a child would not have access to. We have been creating this idea of what the sacred is. Anne Lamott said it in a different way. You can safely assume that you have created God in your own image when it turns out that God hates all the same people you do. Both of these examples make an assumption that the sacred existed before we did and that our job is to describe it in some way. Nancy Abrams puts forth a different idea. She is seeking a description of the sacred that does not live separately from what we know as science. And I know I will do her book a disservice here by trying to distill it into something that will fit into a sermon, but here I go. Ms. Abrams is not a scientist. She's clear about that. But she married an astrophysicist and has spent a lot of time as a non-scientist trying to understand what her husband and his colleagues are talking about. It gives her a great ability of explaining really complicated science in terms that even I can understand. She notes that it is clear that more complex systems develop out of less complex systems. It started with the Big Bang, and there some atoms were created, and in their interactions over an immense amount of time, the universe as we know came to exist. And if you were able to look at that history of the universe, you would see the more complex, the more evolved, comes out of the less complex, the less evolved. In theological terms, it is reductionism versus emergence. The traditional view of God completes a reductionist explanation of existence by appealing to simplicity. It is simpler, they say, to posit an omnipotent being that creates the universe and its laws than to suppose a package of marvels that just happen to exist without reason. A theology of emergence would instead say that at each level of complexity, new qualities that are simply meaningless at lower levels emerge and can be studied in their own right as fundamental phenomena. New laws and regularities emerge with them. A single example would suffice to illustrate the issue. No atom of my body is alive, and yet I am clearly alive. The phenomenon of living is consistent with, but not reducible to, atomic and molecular interactions. There is something to my living that I can understand, but the atoms that help create me cannot. So each level that helps to create the next more complex level cannot always fully understand or comprehend the level that is being created, the next more complicated one. Using this idea of emergence, Abrams posits that the sacred, what she calls God, is emerging out of what has come before it. The phenomenon of the sacred is consistent with but not reducible to the universe as we know it and all the interactions with it. In the old theology, what came before has more power than what comes after. There was a creation that was perfect, and what we are living in life is an ever-ongoing unwinding of that creation, with the Creator being the one who holds all power and all knowledge. In a world where there was not much cultural change and not much change in scientific knowledge, in a place, in a time where what you did was dependent on what your mother or your father did, this made a lot of sense. After all, adults seem to know more than children, and they would raise their children up to do as they had done. But nowadays, with the expansion of scientific knowledge, it is so clear that our children will know things as adults that we can barely imagine. We can see a world where what comes after is so much more complex than what came before. Where 300 years ago it would have seemed like crazy talk to consider this idea that the universe is in the process of creating the sacred, nowadays it is an idea that is easier to imagine. So I appreciate you humoring me and my little philosophical geek out there. I told you, I love talking about theology. But what might it mean for us if we are part of this universe and we are, in fact, transforming the sacred? So everything is creating the sacred, not just us. Every atomic collision, every mating song of the spring geese, every seed that bursts open to give us spring, every conversation each one of us has, every decision I make, every time I cut someone off in traffic or give someone the go-ahead, each of those interactions is helping to create the sacred. We humans are pretty egocentric, and it would be easy to understand what Abrams is saying as we create the sacred. But we are not at the center of the causation of this. All of creation is creating the sacred, from what happens on a subatomic level to what happens on the macro level of the universe. I can't be responsible for what happens out there in some nebula, but I can be responsible for what I do here and now, what I do in the next few minutes. I can commit myself to being more intentional and more thoughtful, for understanding that I am always part of the solution, part of the creation. The issue is, what kind of solution, what kind of creation, what kind of sacred is being created? There are consequences to our actions. Old thinking was that the consequence was eternal damnation or salvation. And as I've said earlier, I don't buy that. I don't see any evidence in the natural world that that ever happens on any level. I don't see the natural world damning some portion of itself. I see a creation where each part, each molecule, each atom is cherished and used and reused. When the leaves fall from a tree, they don't disappear into some eternal place of punishment or reward. They become the stuff of which the future is made. They are remade. Everything is on its way to somewhere. Everything. We are at our core both stardust and compost. And I think, I'm going to go a little off script here, because it came to me this morning that my more traditional colleagues would think that this was some sort of flim-flam theology, some kind of watered-down thing, some kind of like, you don't really want to commit yourself. There are a lot of easy outs here. And I would challenge that. If what we are doing is creating the sacred, that is some heavy responsibility. When I get up in the morning and I grumble at my dog because he stepped on my foot for the 355th time, I am creating the sacred. When I smile at a child and welcome them, I am creating the sacred. That is an immense responsibility. I don't think I'm wiggling out of anything. And imagine how, if we took this really seriously, it might impact how we treat each other and treat the world. Maybe I might go home and work a little harder at using less and recycling more. Maybe I would be more thoughtful in how many miles I drive and how much gas I use. If we are creating the sacred and we took that seriously, how might that change how we treat one another? How might that change coffee hour or committee meetings or state dinners or international conversations? Nothing is wasted in this universe. I don't know if my clerical clad conversations will result in a whole bunch of new people coming to our congregation, but I would like to believe that they do help in just a little way, in a way that I am responsible for, to create beloved community here and now. Truth be told, I don't want to talk about what kind of sacred there is. I want to talk about what kind of sacred there could be. In a world without end, I know this to be so.